Hey, y'all, you're listening to And Now We Said It. I'm one of the co-hosts, Kelly, and as always, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Lainey. Today, we are kicking off Season 3, Episode 5 of The Real Housewives of New York, called Hot Off the Press. But first, I wanted to do a little introduction to my favorite little family members. Can you say hi, Emily and Jack?
Hi.
You want to say...
Hi, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
No, you got shy all of a sudden, Jack? No? All right.
Go eat your dinner. You guys did a good job.
Good job, guys. All right, they're eating dinner now. Now we can go beyond the PC. Okay, so
we can swear now.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why I wanted to do it in the beginning.
That was cute.
They're very cute. I'm afraid to like plug this back in. So I'm not gonna do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone's used to our normal shit, right?
I mean, it's mainly for me because I can hear clearer, but also I don't really care.
I just don't want to have an echo on the actual recording.
So I should plug them in?
Yeah, you should.
Okay.
Just in case. All right. We're professionals now, Kelly.
Ooh, I was afraid that, I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to hear you, but I can. Awesome.
There we go.
Yay! Hi, everyone. We're back. I mean, we didn't go anywhere, but, you know, I have headphones in, so now it feels official. And per usual, my lovely spouse, if you will, brought me down a steak dinner.
Fucking A. Mm. I have a hot and sour soup and crab rangoons patiently waiting for me when we finish. I was like, it's chilly. What do I want? I want crab rangoons and sweet and sour or hot and sour soup. And I'm drinking, full disclosure, fake champagne in my Golden Girls glass. So.
This is a really chewy piece of steak. What is fake champagne?
It's, I mean, it tastes just like champagne, but it doesn't have any alcohol in it, so I don't get drunk and start stealing your wallet.
The whole 1 cent I have in there, maybe.
Yeah, but I would still steal it, and then you would be upset.
I mean...
I would even help you look for it after I stole it.
That's the kind of bitch you are.
That's a good... This is great radio right here.
Full disclosure, I am a little high. Not really. It actually wore off already.
I had a day today. Do you ever have those days?
Just so every day is a day?
No, I mean, I know, like it was like a day day.
All right, what happened? Tell us.
So you know how, first of all, I woke up with the worst headache this morning. And I got up, I went to work, and I just, sorry, my dog's being annoying. And I just like, I feel like things aren't just like falling into place the way that they need to. So I have a pep talk with myself. I make a huge list. I start sending emails and making phone calls and kind of, I checked it twice.
You find out who's naughty and nice?
Well, I did find out who was naughty. Oh.
Tell us more.
So I make lists. I send everything out I'm supposed to send. I'm like really proud of myself. And then I had to fire somebody.
Oh no.
Which not only was uncomfortable and awkward, but it also derailed all my good work.
I don't, what? Were they naughty? That's why you had to fire them?
They weren't naughty to me, but they had been naughty previously, and yeah.
Oh, it's unfortunate. I'm sorry. I don't think I could ever fire someone. That's I'd be okay. way too uncomfortable. I'd be like, oh, you want to fire me instead? Okay, bye. Like, I wouldn't know what to do.
Well, I was talking with the project manager, and he's, like, telling me what's going on. I go, oh, that's an awkward conversation. And he goes, yeah, we'll have fun with it. I was like, that's not really my job.
That was not in the job description. Thanks.
But if you're going to pussy out, I guess it's on me.
On you.
No, I mean, he said he would do it. But he was like, I haven't really talked with them, so you already have a rapport. So probably it's coming better from you. But I pretty much was like, this is a situation. Call so-and-so because they know more than I do.
So fair I enough. Just, like, yeah. pushed it right like, back. Bye.
Yeah, so that was my day. So I decided to treat myself to some hot and sour soup and crapper goods.
I haven't had a good day in a while. Just my shoulder. Not getting any better.
Yeah.
I will say I did find out I have a fourth round interview tomorrow.
That's a lot of rounds.
And then I'm supposedly meeting on Zoom with a few other people as well from the company.
I mean, that's great news. Congratulations. But that's a lot of rounds.
This is more than, and I'm wondering if it's just because it's through Zoom and they want to have as many people kind of get a feel for things. But as of now, I've already met with, or, you know, quote unquote, met with three people. Tomorrow will be the fourth, and then there'll be a few more, I guess.
Yeah.
Makes me feel like it's an important position.
I mean, I don't think they wouldn't be going to that length if they weren't pretty sure about you.
I'm hoping so. I had a good feeling and about the interview I had on Thursday, and the one who's in charge of everything, I don't know his exact title, but he said that the general counsel who I met with really enjoyed our conversation and they'd like to, you know, have me go to the next round. So that was pretty cool. So it felt good that I felt confident about something and then got reinforced with that confidence.
Yeah. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks. Even if it doesn't go anywhere else, it went there. I got that far. And that's pretty cool.
Also, I don't think we've talked about this yet. Next week, we have a special guest on the podcast.
Yes, we do. A very special guest on the podcast.
Do we want to keep it secret or do we want to reveal?
Let's do not a full reveal, but let's just say this person's probably our first listener.
Our number one fan.
Our number
one. For sure.
Number one female fan.
Yes.
Sorry. I got to go to bat for John here. That man listens every day.
Our number one fan that neither of us have sex with?
Fair. Fair point. That works. That also works. Hey, remember how that episode I was like, yeah, I'm going to say, actually, I don't even remember what I said, but that's how I'll know. I said something about bitch, and that's how I'll know if he listened. And so I was going to the doctor and he was coming home from work and we passed each other and we met because he grabbed me a coffee and he goes, apparently I'm supposed to call you a bitch or something. And I was like, what? He goes, from the podcast. I was like, I completely forgot. So
yeah, I don't remember what I say.
But he remembers. So
that's good. Do you want to start talking about these hags?
I do. I just want to kind of, I'm had everything organized and now there's food next to me and I'm very confused. I don't know why that's a confusing thing, but tis.
Well, I feel like that's your baseline.
You're not wrong. So I did, you know, I decided to do some research and I sent some stuff to you because we discussed kind of Kelly Ben Simone, what we think where her children are at now. So her daughters are 20.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah. C's 22 and Teddy is 20. And Kelly Ben Simone always comments creepy things on her, on C's bikini photos. And then Teddy posted a photo with a very weird hashtag and her father, Gilles Ben Simone, just wrote, really? And I thought that was the best response of all time. And
yeah, because that's the appropriate dad response right there.
That's it, right? The parental response, 100%.
Yeah.
So sad to say, I don't think they're doing well emotionally.
I mean, the pictures you sent me, like, they look trailer parky.
A little bit.
Yeah, they kind of have that, like, trampy trailer park look to them, which is sad.
It's just sad that that Kelly Bensimone, any mother, would write, like, wow, on, like, comments. Like, wow, like, you're so hot. Like, no, what? No, you're, no, mom, ew, moms don't do that.
You're beautiful, I love you.
Oh, you're such a smart.
That bathing suit's too small for you. You're never allowed to wear it again because boys are going to want to date you. Like,
I mean, she's 22, so fine. But, like, also, I don't know, maybe something else besides that.
Yeah.
Just an idea.
Or don't comment at all because it's her personal account and it's for her and her friends and her people and not her mother. Like, I can't imagine, I don't have kids, but, you know, I can't imagine, like, just my kid posting, like, a random photo that I would feel the need to comment on it, you know, unless it was something kind of relating to me specifically.
No, when I,
like, you go, I probably wouldn't even be following my kids. I'd be like, I don't want to know. You go be a hoe. It's fine.
No, see, they have two things. They have an Instagram and a Finsta, a fake Insta. So they give their parents the Instagram account, and then they use the Finsta for their friends to get away with all the stuff. That's what I've
interesting.
Heard. I'm still friends and comment with my ex, Christian, his daughter, Michaela. I lived with them for about a year. And
yeah,
I still keep in contact with her. So I don't know. But like,
and that's totally, yeah, that's totally fine. But I'm sure you don't comment on every single one of her pictures like your pals.
No, sometimes I'll just be like, miss you. Or I'll just like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a whole lot
little
of.
Little heart emoji. Yeah.
Nothing.
Maybe
intense.
Like a DM, like miss you kiddo kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. Not like a wow. Because that's just fucking weird.
Yeah. So we open the episode with a
Carpenter
Bethany
crack.
And Julie. Carpenter crack. It's plumber crack.
It's plumber's
okay?
butt.
Carpenters don't. Isn't that the same thing?
But people call it plumber's butt. Plumber's crack?
But it's the crack. It's
right.
The
crack. Yeah. I've never heard
we're
it called.
We're all discussing the crack.
I've never heard it called carpenter's crack. And I started dying laughing when she said that. I was like, oh, cannot wait. Cannot wait.
I know. I heard it. And I was like, we can pull our pants up.
How stereotypical of you to stereotype us. Ugh.
God, Bethany.
Ew. Ew.
Ew.
Ew. So there was some gossip in the Gate Crasher, Daily News, Mail, whatever you want to call it, that her and Jill were quote unquote frenemies. And then Bethany goes, what are we, 13, 26? And Julie goes, I'm 26. And she's like, oh, sorry, not me. You know what I mean. And so then she said that, you know, all of the things that were plugged within the gossip column all showed that they were all promotions for companies that Luann is a part of or Jill is a part of. So they're getting, like, kind of free plugs.
Yeah.
So that's why she said it has, you know, this gossip piece about them has her hands all over.
Yeah, because it talked about the Saks event and the Angaro event, which were clearly, like, Page Six isn't going to talk about those if they don't have a reason to.
Right. And she's like, it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take you to be Angela Lansbury to figure this one out. That was the second Angela Lansbury reference I've heard this week. It's not a common reference.
I don't think that's enough.
I used to watch Murder, She Wrote with my grandmother all the time.
Have I ever told you my theory on Murder, She Wrote?
That it's real?
That she's the killer?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Oh. And that her husband's still alive and he helps her commit the crimes?
Ooh. I like that part.
Yeah. Also, in one episode, there is an she's in a record store and there's an Agnostic Front poster up like right behind her. And Agnostic Front is not only a band that I really love, but it's a band that like I actually have a friend who plays in. Mm-hmm. And they're like a wicked old school hardcore band. And like I remember just watching the episode and I was like, I'm sorry. Was that an Agnostic Front poster? And I had to like go back and I was like, holy fuck.
That's so funny and random.
Like, I know, it was awesome.
It's just, it was weird because like, you know, my grandmother passed away on Valentine's Day, not this past one, but 2019. And we were very, very mm-hmm. close. And one of the shows that we watched together was Murder, She Wrote every, you know, all the
That's
time.
That's really cute.
So to have two yeah. references in one week, I'm like, what are you trying to tell me?
I don't know. Grandma, are you there?
Are you there? God, it's me, Margaret.
That's how I got big boobs. I must
increase my bust. Oh my god.
Little girls don't read that book anymore. It's sad.
I know. That is a coming to age book.
That is.
Coming of age.
That's where like we all fall in love with a bad boy who has a heart of gold and
I mean it's like Breakfast Club, except, you know, not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like everyone to know, as since we're talking about Jill and gossiping, I did get Secrets of a Jewish Mother in hard copy delivered today. And, you know, at some point, I think I'm going to read some quotes on chapter one, from chapter one on friendship.
Friendship.
So.
Yep. So the one thing that I want would like to put a pin in for later in the episode is Paris Hilton sent Bethany an email that said, you should hear the interesting things Jill Zarin had to say about you.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah. Do you want to move on to Kelly Bensimone being the biggest creep ever?
Yes, I wrote.
Or did you have anything else to say about?
No, I just said Perez and I put quote unquote termites because that's what she calls Perez and his reporting. Yeah. And I was like, check mark, yes. Anyone that goes to him and hangs out with him are termites. I mean, at this point in the game. This was the most awkward. Anytime I see Kelly. A scene with Kelly and a guy, I just like cringe because she's fishing for a compliment. Like she's like, did you see it? I don't remember what I did. Can you tell me? Do you remember what I did? What did I look like? Did you like it? And I would like to put a pin in because in her confessional, she goes, you know, you just got to flirt with them. This is how you flirt. And then you find out if they're going to ask you out or not.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put a pin in that for later.
Okay.
So then she tells us.
Yeah, she's just creepy during the, like, she's just throwing herself at a professional colleague, by the way.
It was disgusting. And also, like, she's like, I think people are going to freak out. Who? What people? Did anyone freak out? I don't think so.
A lot of people are curious as to what I look like without my clothes on.
A lot of people are curious what a lot of people look like without their clothes on. I don't know. A narcissistic, sociopathic, schizophrenic drug addict. That's who says it.
I assume nobody wonders what I look like without my clothes on.
I'm sure somebody does.
Yeah, I mean, fine. That's fine. But like, I don't walk around thinking that people
weird.
Do.
It's weird.
I'm busy. I have places to be. I have people to fire.
I am. What the heck? I am not busy, but I still don't walk around being like, everyone thinks about me without my clothes off. Yeah.
I mean, like, I think about you without your clothes on every so often. Like, every third Wednesday of the month, I just spend about an hour thinking what you look like without your clothes on.
You know what? And I will tell you, my boobs don't point in opposite directions like Kelly Ben Simone. So this...
Her cockeyed boobs.
That her poor daughter inherited. So in her confessional, in one of her confessional looks, she's wearing the white, I think is that one I'm talking about. But she looks so tan that it's like a purple-red color.
Yeah, she looks like a tomato.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It, like, looks painful. And then she says that The Giving Tree is her favorite book. You know it's because it was Joel the only
Silverstein
book.
Silverstein rolled in his grave.
First off, it was the only book she needed the title of because her daughter probably had to read it for school. And then he was like, first off, his reference to the new book he read from Sweden just made me, like, when I was watching, I was like, oh my gosh, it was so long ago. He's like, yeah, I'm reading this new Swedish book, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And then Kelly.
Do you remember when that was an obscure reference?
Yes. And but then she goes, I don't have any tattoos. That was her response. So it, like, hand, like, Bible. Like, she just responded with, yeah. I don't have any tattoos. And then she goes in her confessional, she goes, I need to brush up on my literature. Foreign, that is. Nope, sweetie, you need to brush up on all your literature. If your favorite book of all time is The Giving Tree, great book. Highly recommend everyone read it. I think it's a cop-out for your favorite book.
My favorite book of all time is Catch 22.
Okay. That's a solid one.
Right?
That is a solid one. I'd tell you mine, except I'm going to give you my second favorite book.
Because the first one's The Giving Tree?
No. So my second favorite book is Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, that's a great book.
My first favorite book, you hate the author.
Jane Austen? Phil Collins?
Leave his music alone.
Fuck that guy, he's an asshole.
I'll be in your heart. You'll be in my heart. It's a great song. No, it's The Fountainhead.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that broad. Sorry.
I don't love her. I just like the book. I think the book's really, really well written, and I like the theme.
I read Anthem because it was the only thing under 1,000 pages she had just to see if I could like her writing. I don't even like her writing.
Yeah, you don't have to apologize to me. I didn't read anything else. I've only read The Fountainhead. I write about 100 pages, put it down, and then a year later I had nothing to read, and I picked it back up and then got really into it like 300 pages in. But then... when I got into it, I got really fucking into it. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, the themes in the book started to really pick up at that point. So I'm glad I read it. I had to take no personal offense to that because I don't love her ideologies either. But that book is a book that will resonate with me always.
Yeah. It's hard for me to pick my favorite book. Like, because there's just so many of them that I just...
It is hard.
You know what book I actually do love is Another Bullshit Night in Suck City. Have you ever read that?
No, who wrote it?
Nick something? It's actually about a guy from Boston whose dad is an alcoholic, lives in the Pine Street Inn, and he's kind of like following in the footsteps, and it's just really raw and like kind of just like real shit book, but like very well written. It's like really good. Yeah. And then like I think not the Basketball Diaries, but the next installment of that is called Four Centuries, and it's like the 3 years later after the Basketball Diaries are written. Mm-hmm. That is also one of my favorite things. I love Jim Carroll. He's one of my favorite poets. So that's another one.
My right now, my reading consists of CEO.
The Giving Tree?
CEO research. I bought a book on CEO. Didn't buy a book on CEO. Bought a book on SEO.
I'm like, is this the Dummy's Guide to be a CEO or something?
It's actually basically the Dummy's Guide to Search Engine Optimization. So I've been reading that to learn more about that stuff. And then I've been going back and forth. I have been reading The Art of the Memoir. I've been reading Martin Short's memoir. I've been reading The Total Money Makeover.
Have you ever read Stephen King's On Writing?
I have it. I've read about a half of it.
That's a fantastic book for writing.
I have, trust me, any book from... So my main thing right now is to finish The Art of the Memoir. And then I'm also going to be reading... most of the books that I'm going to be reading right now are memoirs to see the different stylistic, you know, how they write about experiences. Like, do they... you know, do they say, like, this is how I recall it, or, you know, this is what happened definitely, or different, like, little nuances like that. So that is going to be my focus of reading.
I think you would like Whitney Cummings' book.
I probably would. I like a lot of the comedic memoirs. Jen Lancaster is probably my favorite. I call her a humor memoirist. Her first book was called Bitter is the New Black, or Why Never to Carry a Prada Bag to the Unemployment Office. Love it. And then...
that's very, like, Chuck Klosterman type stuff.
So she writes, like, so this book was written when she got laid off during the dot-com burst. Mm-hmm. And then, so this was this whole experience with that. And then her next memoir was called Such a Pretty Fat. And it was about, like, her weight loss journey, and then, you know, she realized it's not about the weight, it's about how you feel about yourself, but it's all, like, laugh out loud funny. She is my favorite author of all time.
Yeah. I really only read books about the Salem Witch Trials, which no one who listens to the podcast really knows why, but someday I'll talk about it.
I will not talk about it ever.
But yeah, I read a lot of history books currently. I like that Kelly Bensimone, of all people, just led us on a tangent about literature.
Of all people. That's fucking
fraud. Of all people.
Of all people.
I don't think she's at... I do think, by the way, that she hired this man, that he's another Max Gigolo that she hired to, like, pretend.
Why don't we just see if we can pull up the article that was in Playboy and see what the name was?
Ooh, that's smart.
That's called Angela Lansbury detective work right there. Nancy Drew, Harriet the Spy, could never.
So we go to Luann in the Hamptons, and Victoria draws a shoe, and Luann says, wow, is that a shoe?
I mean...
I mean... it looked like a shoe.
There was nothing to make it questionable as to what it was. I'd be like, no, actually, it's a penguin. His name's Steve, the penguin. He's my god.
Yeah.
He's an awesome god.
No, that song's going to be stuck in my head.
Yes, that's why I did it. Our god
you suck.
Is an awesome god. He came from heaven. Okay, so... I have a
couple. Why do you know that song?
I went to Catholic school.
Oh, I thought they only said the. I thought that was like purely evangelical type stuff.
No. Oh. I went to Catholic high school.
Oh.
And I was super, super religious until I got divorced and the Catholic Church disowned me. Thank you so much. Okay, but so
go ahead.
I was going to make fun of
you.
Lou.
Go ahead. Oh no! By all means, then go.
So she goes, you know, Victoria draws a lot of, you know, dresses and shoes. I really think she wants to be a designer. Okay, first off, great deductive reasoning, fucking Carmen Sandiego. So then she's talking to Victoria and she goes, maybe we'll get you a stage. Just say internship for fuck's sake. And then she's talking about how they need to get another place in New York. And she goes, you know, we need another pied de terre. We just need another place to live. But then she goes, yeah, you miss it, so you can go out to the lunch and movie in the movies. The lunch and the movies. You can't have a correct English sentence, but let's just say stage instead of internship and pied de terre. Fuckface.
Well, I think she's trying to pretend she's more French than she really is. Kind of like me.
Fair. If you watch The Queen's Gambit, you'll really like the music in it. I actually think you'll really like the movie. Not a movie. TV series.
I saw the first episode, and I just thought the girl was very unlikable. It made me want to play chess, though.
I play on my phone. I'll get you the app, and we can play each other. I'm not good.
I like it.
But, no, the childhood her, eh, but when she's older, she's better.
Okay.
So then they talk about Luann dating and Victoria.
Wait, can we go back to the apartment, though?
Yeah.
Because Luann has spent from season 3 to now looking for a New York apartment, and it's never happened.
Nope. Really?
Yeah.
I thought she had one.
Every season she's looking for a new place in the city, and she never gets one.
It's just like Ramona and her renewal. Oh. And Jack's in the...
Yep.
I'm trying to be better. It never happens, guys. You never renew. You never get a home in New York, and you're never going to be better. You heard it here.
Yeah.
Live from Massachusetts. Kelly out. Just kidding. Kelly's still in.
And then Luann says the funniest thing of all time.
Ooh, let me hear it.
I would never go out with someone 20 years younger than me. And to this, I say, footnote, see also Lou and Pirate.
Footnote, see also. I would like to point out this. The stylistic way you wrote your notes is indicative of what you're actually doing right now on the side. That was the best way for me to not say what you're doing, but let you know that that's what I'm thinking that you're doing.
I mean, it's really not a big secret what I'm... Okay, I can talk about what I'm doing. So I'm starting a blog to talk about the Salem Witch Trials because it was what my graduate dissertation was supposed to be about, but I never actually did my graduate whatever. And so now my life is where it is and I'm doing it and... I don't know. It's called The Witch Academic if you want to check it out. If you don't, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. But it's my little passion project.
It's pretty cool. And I don't know if it's just from being around here or whatever, but I am obsessed with Salem. I've been obsessed with the witch trials my entire life. So for me, it's super fascinating too. But because she's doing a ton of research, that would be why she wrote footnote. See also, Luann and Pirate. Instead of pins, you're like adding footnotes now. You're like footnote 3.
Yeah, now it's footnotes.
Footnote 4. We're just going to put a footnote on that one. That's not how footnotes work, Lane. Okay. We'll just let her have it, folks. We'll just let her have it. Victoria gave her a little bit of a dig when she was like, because Luann was like, oh, do you think I should, you know, start dating? And she goes, yeah, because Papa obviously moved on. Ouch.
Yeah, well.
I mean, she's not wrong.
Mm-mm.
But she's not even mad at her, like, at her dad for cheating on her mom. She's like, Papa obviously moved on. I was like,
well, I think the kids knew for a long time that that marriage was pretty much not. I don't think they're... I don't think they grew up in a home where, like, their parents' marriage was consequential to any part of their life, because their parents, like, didn't ever really interact with them anyways, so.
True that. A little bit more so now, but.
Yeah. So, Jill and Allie went to the 17 magazine shoot. I'm going to be completely honest. I fast forwarded through this whole thing because I could not handle watching Jill be a monster to her child.
So, I have very few things to say. Is 17 magazine still around? No idea. Okay.
Sure.
So, it was the perfect fit prom dresses photo shoot. And then Kelly meets them there and Jill goes, Kelly is a pretty famous model.
Claudia Schiffer is a pretty famous model.
Gisele Bündchen, pretty famous model.
But let's go back to, like, Kelly Ben Simone's era of modeling. You had Cindy Crawford, which...
You had Gisele Bündchen.
Kelly at No, not that far back.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'll look. Keep talking.
You had Cindy Crawford, Claudia Schiffer, Linda Evangelista, Christy Turlington. Like, what's the little heroin addicted Kate Moss?
I was like, Twinkie.
Like, the most iconic supermodels of all time were supermodels in the era that Kelly Killoran Ben Simone was a model. And she was not. Tyra Banks even was huge at that point, probably.
I would like to point out that I did not know that Gisele dated Leonardo DiCaprio for 5 years.
I didn't know that either.
Okay, so... When she started modeling or her breakthrough? Which would you like?
I don't know. Just give us a date range of like...
1997 is when she began.
Really?
Alexander McQueen chose her for his spring 1998 ready-to-wear show. And then in 2000, she appeared on 37 international Vogue covers, including 3 in the American edition.
That makes zero sense. She was 41 years old.
She's
in her 50s.
Who, Gisele?
That means she would have been like all... No. Oh, Gisele. No. I'm talking about Kelly Killoran Ben Simone.
No, I know, but I'm talking about them being around at the same time. Modeling at the same time frame, and you said they weren't.
They might have overlapped.
But, oh, my God.
But when Kelly was in her most...
So you know when you click on and start typing on someone's name and it tells you what they are underneath it?
Yes.
Like in gray. It says Kelly Killoran Ben Simone, because I just wrote Kelly Killo to start, and it goes American real estate agent.
Oh yeah, you didn't know that?
But it, not world famous model.
No.
She's an American real estate agent, author, socialite, founding editor of Elle Accessories, and a former model.
So you're saying Kelly Ben Simone started modeling in 97?
No, I told you that's when Gisele started modeling.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm looking okay,
when did Kelly start modeling?
I'm looking right now. So all I can find is, as a model, she appeared in magazines such as Elle, Cosmo, and Harper's Bazaar, and was once the face of Clarins. She appeared on the cover and in a 6-page pictorial in the March 2010 edition of Playboy. So everything I see here is all from that on.
Hold on, I'm looking.
It's got to be somewhere. Well, she got married to Gilles in 1997, so just assume it was the same time frame. She began working as a model in her teens. That's what it says. But
yeah, so
that doesn't really count.
She was 41 when this was airing, so she had to have started in the late 80s.
I don't think so. She graduated.
Oh, Al McPherson was another one at that time frame.
Oh, Al McPherson was stunning. Not that she's not still stunning, but. All right, I'm not. I don't want to deep dive into this. Now I'm going down a rabbit hole, and we just totally lost.
I'm just saying, if she truly started as a teenager, she would have had to be like 88, 89 in there, and like maybe hit her peak somewhere like 93, 94. At which point, all the models that I mentioned were the top models in the world, and also possibly of all time, because that was like. That time frame of models was, like, unbelievable. And, like, just their fame that they had was unbelievable. Mm. So, yeah, she's a nobody.
No. And
that's why she's on The Real Housewives of New York.
And then Jill goes, I like to be able to be like, she's with me. Of course you do. But I will say that it was nice of Kelly to go and support Allie. It's the only nice thing. Oh, you missed the best part. Drama. Okay.
Oh.
Not real drama. Drama for us though. Okay. So Jill's talking to Kelly about dating. They talk about like the journalist guy, and then they do the whole thing that Bethany did, where Bethany's like, "I like smart," and so Kelly goes, "I like smart." Jill says, "The reason we like smart is because money is around it, and if things are bad, you can always figure out a way out of it if you're smart."
I mean, my IQ is higher. I have a stupid high IQ. I'm poor as shit.
They like smart men because money is around it.
Yeah, they don't like smart men. They like rich men.
And I know we already talked about this, but she's like, and you don't go for the peacocks, the pretty boys. I'm sorry, pretty boys are not synonymous with fuck boys. Just because someone's good looking doesn't mean they're an asshole.
What she's saying, allow me to translate, like, let me get my gold digger to English dictionary out.
Yes.
What you're saying is, not what you're saying, but what she's saying is, you go for the ugly rich guy, the old ugly ass rich guy, because then he's really excited to have you and he'll just give you his money. But that's how you wind up with daughters who look like they're from Tampa Bay. No disrespect to anyone. No, fuck you. I'm disrespecting Tampa Bay.
Fuck you, Tampa Bay.
We all know what people from Tampa Bay look like. Or actually, no. I'll take it back, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville.
That's a statement I can get behind.
Kelly Ben Simone's daughters look like they're from Jacksonville.
Ooh, I was going to say, like, Reno.
I mean, six in one, half dozen in the other, really.
Did you hear the Reddit podcast episode on the Best Mediocre Morning Show?
Yes.
About the girl, about the one I was reading with stupid things people have heard other people say. And this guy wrote, or girl wrote, my coworker was mad because her boyfriend only got her 12 roses and not a dozen. It's like he doesn't even love her. and the person commented, maybe her parents are bakers.
That's really funny.
Isn't it?
Now, if she had a smart man around, he could have figured that out for her. And there would have just been money for the roses as well.
Maybe her parents were bakers.
That's a great line.
So then we go to Cipriani.
So, yeah.
Go ahead. I can't say the word.
No, that was a so, yeah. I just ran out of things to say.
Well, no, I was going to say, so now we're at Cipriani. I can't say it.
I don't want to help you.
That's rude.
Sound it out.
Cipriani?
Cipriani? Yes!
Cipriani? But there's no H.
Cipriani's.
We're going there.
We're going there.
I don't know when, but we're going there. All right.
Someday, when we can go, we'll go.
We'll go. The only thing I wrote was... We'll go. I mean, I wrote a bunch of stuff, but the one thing I wrote was, those shoes!
That's the same guy from the Angaro event, and his name's Derek. I don't know if he had a name the last time we saw him, but his name's Derek. He's adorable, and I love him. The theme for Brooklyn Fashion Week is Manhattan Goes to Brooklyn, which apparently Ramona was the muse of.
Fucking Ramona. I like that Ramona says she's a size, and again, I don't care what size you are, but she says she's a size 2. Then the guy goes, oh, well, this is like a 4 or 6, and he gives it to her to try on, and then she's like, this is so snug on me. And I was like, maybe just don't say your size if you don't want people to know it on national TV. I think you look beautiful. It doesn't matter what your size is.
Yeah.
But you told the guy you're 2, and a 4 to 6 is way too tight on you. So.
Yeah, but a 4 to 6 sample is still a 2. So she's probably a 4.
I'd give her a 4-6. I think she's very thin and very, you know, has a very good body. But
yeah, no, she's got a great body. Those samples are tiny.
I do not like when people just like try to low. Like, just who cares? Who cares what you weigh? Who cares what your size is? I don't fucking care.
Most of America, that's who.
God, I'm like tripping up. There's so many wires because I haven't, you know. John made this desk.
I love when Bethany goes off. And she goes, diarrhea of the mouth is not a real ailment. That might be one of the best Bethany lines ever.
It's so true, though.
Yeah.
And then... Kelly doesn't want Ramona to repeat the comment that she's pissed about Ramona making, which was literally, did you get a boob job? And then she's like, it's just not okay. It's not okay. And Ramona goes, I refute that. I refute that. I refute that.
Mm.
I'm like, okay. And then, so Bethany apologizes regarding the Daily Mail and for them getting dragged into it. And then Ramona says, let's not talk about someone who's not here. People write things. Who cares? Dude, Ramona, you care. You hate when your name gets brought up in a fucking smudge, what's it called? Not smudge piece. What's it?
I don't know.
The type of like newspaper article.
I could help you with Cipriani's. I have nothing for you.
All right. Oh, and then I wrote, poor Kelly. Wah, wah, wah. Let's rehash. And then Bethany reminds her that Kelly wanted a truce. And then this is where I realized Kelly Kaloran Bensimone can't argue. She can only filibuster.
I would be really impressed with what you just said, but I'm not entirely sure what a filibuster is. Okay. So
a filibuster is a part, like an action in government, in Congress, where you're trying not to get a vote to happen. Like they can't vote if you're still talking and someone from your party is still talking. So what they'll do is it's called a filibuster. So someone will come up and they'll just start reading like a cooking book. And the whole thing is just like them reading. And it's just them not giving up their time to let anyone else speak.
And then they run out of time and can't vote.
And then the vote just keeps going and it allows them to make, it keeps getting postponed and postponed. I think, I don't remember the exact stuff, but it allows them to do behind the scenes, you know, negotiations between the parties. Like, oh, I'll give up this part of the budget if you guys give up this part of the budget or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, but that's what I was watching and I was like, wow, she doesn't argue. She just filibusters. She just doesn't let anyone else talk.
Yeah, she definitely has an interesting style of conflict.
Yeah.
So this is also going to become a footnote for Scary Island.
Okay.
This moment. Because she says, you do the same thing to me in reference to going to the papers. And then she said, you went to the press to attack me. And Bethany goes, I never went to the press to attack. I never even talked about you in the press. So that comes up in Scary Island. So this is the primary source for the secondary episode.
Killing me with the primary and the secondary.
So, yeah, I'm not.
So
I'll shut up now.
No, it's fine. I love it. I'm a nerd. Wait, so what happened here? I feel like I missed this like exchange. I thought they were just talking about Jill and then some.
They were talking about Jill and Bethany.
I don't know how it turned into that.
Ramona, yeah, Ramona called Bethany a press monger. And Bethany was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't go to the press and do all that stuff. And that's the point where Kelly was like, I can't keep my mouth shut anymore. I just know the truth. And she says, you do the same thing to me. You went to the press to attack me. And this is something that becomes a much bigger issue later on. So, yeah. You're a dickhead, by the way.
That was so fucking impressive. That was so impressive.
Kelly just ate corn like a hooker going to town.
No.
On a flaccid penis.
I was holding it horizontal.
Just to try and trip me up during that.
I was making the ugliest chewing faces, like corn was falling out of my mouth. She would not make eye contact with the screen at all. I was like, this bitch needs to look and start laughing. She did not. It was very funny. Also,
Did you hear a word of anything I said? Alright, then let's move on.
We can discuss off air. That was so fun. So Simon comes in, and someone goes, how are you? And he goes, I think I'm fine. And if that's not an us answer, I don't know what is. How are you? I think I'm fine.
I think I'm okay.
Not unclear. TBD. And then Bethany's like, I don't belong in fashion. I just don't. All right, skinny girl. And her skinny girl jeans.
Well, I feel like that's Midwest fashion, though.
And she goes, the bedazzle. It's nothing I'd put on Cookie. And I was like, well, don't disrespect Cookie like that. Put it on Ramona.
Yeah, so these were the fashions I wrote down. The swimwear and couture gowns. The petite athletic build, and then the fabulous man with the bright yellow dress.
Yes. I just wrote, Kelly once again, quote unquote, doesn't care. The dress that Alex tried on, that yellow, with the yellow bow, looked stunning on her. That was the prettiest dress.
Yeah, she looked great.
I really liked it.
And then Kelly, Ben Simone, and Bethany have yet another truce, and in the interview, Kelly, to feel like she's in charge of things, goes, I declared the conversation over. O-V-E-R.
The convo is
done. Guess she can spell a little bit?
Done. Bitch, you said that last time, and here we are. You're doing the same thing over and over. Guess what the definition of insanity is?
Being Kelly, Ben Simone?
Yep.
I think we're going to change the definition. Like, look up insanity, her picture will be there.
That used to be such an insult when you were little. Like, well, if you look up stupid in the dictionary, your face is there.
Yeah, well, if you look up smelly in the dictionary, your face is there.
Whatever you say, bounces off me and it sticks to you like glue. Ah.
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me.
Words
and
hurt me a lot more than anything physical.
Yeah, beat me with a baseball bat. Just beat don't say anything mean.
About, like, literally, beat the crap out of me. I'll recover. You say something mean to me, my entire life, I'm going to be thinking back to that one moment when I was in seventh grade when I was like, and he said that I wasn't his type.
Yeah.
It's like the most...
Words hurt a lot.
Words are so much worse. Give me the sticks. Give me the stones. Give me the pyre where I get, you know, just set. I'll die on the pyre. I don't care at this point. Words are worse than physical action.
Yep. So Ramona and Jody, this is kind of a throwaway scene. We don't really have to get into it, but I just love Jody. I wrote some stuff down too, but, this was really just like, I felt a lot for Ramona in this moment.
I think, first off, renew. Does she renew? I don't know. She only says renew a million times in that one conversation. No. And Jody's like, it is a renewal. I'm like, if you either of you motherfuckers say renew one more goddamn time, say it. And then, so Ramona's like, we met like, 16 years ago and half our friends divorced. And, you know, Mario and I are at our stage in our relationship where, you know, Avery's older, so we're really getting through our marriage. Our marriage is just doing so well. And I was like, oh, no. Yeah, so that made me sad. And then she said that she likes Alex and Simon because she escaped to Brooklyn as a child when her father was beating her mother. They escaped to Brooklyn. But then I think there's also some type of Freudian thing because she hates Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So it's like you say you like it because it reminds you, but it's not.
Well, no, I think what she said was, I think the reason I don't like Alex and Simon is because that's the association I have with Brooklyn.
I think she said what she likes.
I just wrote they used to go to Brooklyn to hide from her dad. But the way she said it sounded like I have such a negative association with Brooklyn that like...
See, I took it as...
That might have been part of why I originally disliked Alex and Simon.
I read it as her just liking those times because they were away from her father.
Yeah. Maybe she said something like that, too.
I don't know. But she did say, in his death, he released me from the depression I suppressed. I mean, from the depression. I said that right. Okay. And I thought that for Ramona, that was a very...
astute.
Mm-hmm. It was a good observation. It's a hard thing to kind of... find it within yourself to do, and I give her major props for that.
Yeah. And I think we make fun of Ramona for not ever renewing herself or and never changing, but I think it's also important to note that Ramona learned, like, right around this time that if she was a caricature of herself, she would always be really popular in a Housewives universe. So I think the private Ramona is probably much different than the one that we see.
Agreed.
It was just a sad scene, so, you know.
So, Kelly's assistant clearly hates her.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, like, she's trying to read emails and she looks just really confused.
I paused it because I was writing down a quote.
Uh-huh.
And, when I paused it, John was like, look at her eyes. Her eyes... And it wasn't Kelly, it was the assistant. He goes, her eyes look like she's just waiting for the next bullshit thing she has to work her way through to keep this job. And I was like,
that's hilarious.
And then, so the friend goes, or assistant, she goes, so what the reporter guy was like, I already got a peek, so you want to go out? And then she's like, just kidding. And I was like, you do not respect her at all. I love it.
Well, also, she says the most douchebaggy thing ever, which I think she does get called out on later on, where she goes, I was married to Gilles Benzimon. He's huge. And the next guy I'm with is going to be someone huge like him. And you're just like, so rich? Mm-hmm. Is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. In the community. You know, the socialite community. That type of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Then she's like, you know, in hindsight, I don't mix business with pleasure. It's not in hindsight, first off, because your confessional where you said that you did this on purpose was after he asked you out anyways. So
yeah,
you're lying a lot.
Also, you already made yourself look like a fool by throwing yourself at him, so you don't really get to pull the, like, professionalism thing out. You know, like, I can't walk up to a guy at work and be like, and then be like, but we can't date. It would be unprofessional. Like, I've already made myself look like a fucking idiot. Like, all professionalism right. has already gone out the window. There's no recovering that.
None. So, I have two things. I quoted the email, and then I also mm-hmm. would like to read a little bit about friendship after.
Okay. Before you do that, I would just like to note that the font on this email is apparently DOS from 1986. What the fuck was up with that?
I didn't look at it. I was too busy writing it down. I didn't look at it.
Oh, it was literally like that old school, like, typewriter looking font emails when the internet first happened.
Yes. Oh, I need to go and just find that. I'm not surprised, to be fair. She's so behind the times. She probably still has that black DOS screen. She's like trying to code. Yeah. Really, it's just her turning the computer on. She's like, I code. It's like, no, you just turn your computer on. Sorry.
I had a DOS computer. Like, my dad, I was like, Dad, I want a computer. So he's like, someone gave him like an old DOS computer and he was like, here. And the only thing I could do on it was like pull up the directory. So I would just do that for like hours. But like, I would like I was maybe 10 years old and I would just like type on it. But like, then I would feel like something was happening and it would like, I'd pull up the directory.
So when I was about that age, I had the CD-ROM game for the computer of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And mm-hmm. my dumb ass thought if you won, actual money was going to come out of the computer.
That's adorable.
Like, I also played Goosebumps, and when it got dark, I turned all the lights on in my house. Got dark in the game.
Oh.
It could be full daytime, and I'm like, man, this Goosebumps game with really bad graphics is super scary.
I was way too old for Goosebumps. Sorry.
So, ready?
Yes, go.
So the email from Jill to Kelly. Hey, a little birdie told me you were all good with Bethany. I, sadly, am not. I thought you really cared. Good luck with B. You'll need it. Jill. Okay, first off, what are we in, sixth grade? You can't have different groups of friends. You can only have one best friend. Okay, so...
if I hate them, you have to hate them. That's the only way we're friends.
Right. So then, Secrets of a Jewish Mother. Real advice, real stories, real love. Jill Zarin, Lisa Wexler, and Gloria Kamen. Chapter 1. Friendship. Finding a friend is finding the best part of yourself and setting it free. That's a little tagline, if you will. So that's page 1. Page 2. Page 2 into 3. Let's talk about character. Who is a real friend? The easy answer would be the person who helps you when you are out of a job, have just lost your biggest client, or are going through an ugly divorce. Everyone appreciates a consoling phone call, a sympathy card, and someone who takes time to listen. We love these qualities as a friend. However, For the Jewish mother, these traits alone would not make a front row friend. You know you have a front row friend if she will kvel from your nachos. That's Yiddish. I'm doing the best I can. I apologize, people. In other words, a true friend is someone who is sincerely happy for you when good things happen. You hear the word kvel a lot around Jewish grandparents, as in, I could just kvel. My youngest grandson just won the biggest genius award. You know the one, named after the general. Kvelling is expressing your own feelings of pride and joy about someone else's accomplishments. A real friend will kvel when you receive that promotion you've been working for. Your kid has gotten into Harvard. It should only happen. Or you finally manage to lose those last 10 pounds. The good fortune itself, that is what we call the nachos. By sharing your nachos with others, even your closest friend, you do risk the dreaded evil eye. But if you can pick up the phone and brag, you know that the person who answers the phone will be truly happy for you and not send the evil eye your way, then you can call someone a real friend. Based on that test, how many front row friends do we have?
So, Jill sent the evil eye to Bethany.
Let's unpack all of that. And how Jill's doing none of it. And it literally said, they appreciate someone that gives a consoling call, sends gifts, whatever, and that the friend should be happy for the other friend's successes. I mean, the hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy.
And I want to know who wrote it. Who wrote that part?
Lisa Wexler.
Lisa Wexler wrote the whole fucking
She
book.
Wrote that whole book. You know she's the only one who wrote that book.
Yep. That poor thing.
So the evil eye is kind of an interesting thing because I grew up, like, Greeks very much are what, I didn't realize Jewish people kind of reference the evil eye. I know Middle Eastern people in general do, but the evil eye is like, I remember, like, my mom saying, don't say anything good that happens to you. And she took it too far because she was like, don't say anything good ever to anybody.
Fuck you, you're horrible. I love you. Bye.
But, like, I do remember, like, everyone would be like, keep things. And I actually think that's great advice. Like, keep things quiet. Keep things quiet as long as you can because, you know, people will wish ill on you. But I really do think that, like, Jill sent the evil eye to Bethany. And that's why, not that's why her marriage turned out the way it did, but, like, I think there was a hex on her. I fully believe in that shit. Oh, I wear an evil eye all the time.
I totally believe
because
it.
Because I absolutely believe in it.
However, the only evil eye I can think of when I think of evil eye is Real Housewives of Orange County, the Tamra and Gretchen fight.
I don't think I remember. I didn't really watch OC during the Gretchen years. Like, I think I caught, like, her last year. Or the year they were friends and then the following year.
It was pretty funny. But it was about an evil eye.
Yeah. So, so just further confirms that Jill Zarin is an evil bitch. That's really all there is to that.
The only reasonable thing Kelly said ever in her entire life is, it's not my fight, it's their fight. That's it.
Yeah,
the only reasonable
I was actually
thing
really,
she's
I,
ever said.
I was
said.
Proud of her.
I was too.
I was proud of her.
That's why I wrote it.
Yeah.
I'm not for this Mario and Ramona true faith jewelry design women scene.
Yeah, I just...
I skipped
over. I wrote Ramona and Mario selling jewelry, don't care.
I was talking to John and I was like, the reason that Mario is letting her do all of that is because he doesn't care because he's cheating on her. So that's why he's letting her railroad him because he doesn't give a shit. He's checked out of that marriage and just pretends to be happy.
Yeah.
Because he's getting his...
Did I just audibly burp, by the way?
I don't know.
Sorry if I did. Jesus.
I don't know. The world is collapsing inside of me right now. I have no idea.
That's very deep, Kelly.
I know. So then we go to Jill and Lou's house. I mean, Jill's house, Lou's staying over. And has the house calmed down, or is it just my eyes adjusting?
It's Stockholm Syndrome.
Because I was like, oh, it doesn't look as bad as it usually does.
Yeah, that's called Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. Falling in love with my captor.
Yeah.
All right, here it is. This is the...
Well, can we talk about the go big or go home glass first? Because that's B saying, and...
Mm-hmm. We can absolutely. Yep, go right ahead. I'm going to chew on this.
I've never heard... In fact, I believe at the season 2 reunion... No, at the season 1 reunion, Bethany was like, go big or go home. And Jill goes, go big and go home. I love that she has the best lines.
Because Jill always thinks that Bethany comes up with these things that are...
That are, like, completely, like, very common phrases, but she thinks they're original Bethany lines.
That was the weirdest laugh I decided to do. Yes. I had, like, a weird weasel thing going on. I was like, I think I just, like, my whole, like, left side of my body stroked out for a second.
Oh, nice. That's always comfortable. Yeah, and then, but, like, then... Apparently she made that her saying, the go big or go home, to the point where Luann saw a glass at Hallmark, probably, because it was one of those glasses that you buy for someone's birthday or when, like, you don't like them enough party to buy them something meaningful.
Yep.
And, yeah, so I laughed at that a lot.
Same.
And then we do go to Bethany's on the street wearing just the most fabulous jacket.
I wrote that too. Sorry, my watch just keeps, like, buzzing. I wanted to make sure there's no emergency. The end of my notes, the very last thing in my notes says, Bethany's red jacket equals super cute.
Right? Fabulous.
So the last line of my notes. Bethany is so smart to figure out that someone's there so quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, but why do you have to put me on speaker? Oh, are people there?
Oh, because I'm doing something. I need my hands.
Oh, are people with you? Well, yeah, just Daryl and, you know, some friends.
His other brother, Daryl. That was a Bob Newhart reference. I don't know if you're old enough for that reference.
No.
Did you ever watch the Bob Newhart show?
No. I mean, I know. I never watched it. And also, I don't like the whole age having to do with shows, because growing up, my favorite show was I Love Lucy, so.
Fair. But.
I know what it was. I
think age dictates it, because it wasn't a show that, like the Golden Girls, that kind of got played constantly after it went off the air.
Yeah.
So they had these three characters, and two of them didn't talk, and the one that did talk would come in and be like, hi, I'm Larry, and this is my brother Daryl, and this is my other brother Daryl. And it was really funny because they were from Maine. I think they were from Maine, and, like, that's, like, a very Maine thing. Like, Maine people are kind of thought of that way. So
they're off.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that, all I can think of is in Schitt's Creek, they're driving. It's the mayor, Eugene Levy's character, and Eugene Levy's daughter in the show. And they get pulled over, and they're like, act natural, act natural. And they're trying to get, like, rid of milk. Something, like, really obscure and, like, silly. And Will's like, I got this. I'm so good. And then he panics, and the cop was like, what's your names? And he's like, I'm Steve. All right, and what's... And he goes, Steve. His name is also Steve. We're both Steves. And then Alexis is like... She always has these weird things where she, like, in her rich life, always did something crazy. So she's like, if I can get out of an Arabian prince's dungeon, then I can get out of this. Like, she just says, in every episode, like, the most obscure, random like what the fuck story that they always just made it bigger and bigger. And so she's like completely calm and Eugene Levy's just looking at her like, how the hell are you so good at this? What the fuck? I did not raise you, obviously, because he didn't, because they were rich. The nanny. And so he's finding all this stuff out about his daughter. And then fucking the mayor is just like, I'm Steve, and this is Steve also. Like, just that same thing, but like, this is Steve, and oh shit, this is also Steve.
I did get into an argument. Well, yeah, I got into an argument. We'll call it an argument with a guy at a bar one time. Because this girl was like talking about how she, like, the guy she was interested in didn't seem interested in her. And I just kind of go, oh, and she's telling a story, and I go, oh, he's gay. You know, that's why he's, because he's gay. He just doesn't know it yet. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we're just kind of talking, and the guy, like, a few seats over that I'd never seen before was like, leave her alone. Like, how do you just say that about people? Blah, 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 blah. I go, and he had, like, a really shaggy look, and I just look at him. I go, hey, other brother Daryl, why don't you shut the fuck up and mind your own business? It just...
I love it. Did
he get and the it reference? Just turned into this whole thing.
Did he get, so he got the reference?
He got the reference. Oh, gotcha. Everyone got the reference because I said it's stone cold sober too. I said it's super loud.
Well, you could say it loud and I would have been like, I don't know what the fuck she's talking about. This fucking broad over here.
Yeah.
Other brother Daryl, all right. Woohoo. Come on, the happy pill.
Because someone across the way goes, did she just say other brother Daryl? That's amazing.
I love this journey for you.
Thank you. Okay. So we got...
First off, Jill said it wasn't a lie, and I would like to say that a lie of omission is still a lie.
It's still a lie.
A lie by omission is still a fucking lie.
Yeah, she's a dirtbag. I don't... This whole conversation makes my blood boil.
All right, we're at the footnote.
My blood boils.
We're at the footnote.
We're at the footnote. Shit.
Perez. You said you put a footnote in.
I suck. So, yeah, Bethany calls her out about talking to Perez Hilton, and she goes, I never talked to Perez Hilton. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't just have the email from Perez Hilton saying that they talked. We have actual footage of Jill and Perez Hilton chatting quietly in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just saw it. Just saw it.
Last episode, it happened. We saw it. We talked about it on this podcast.
You know you're being filmed every time, ladies, every time. And then you're shocked that something gets caught. You're on film. How are you shocked at this? Like, and still, like, we're in season 10 or a million. I don't know. And they're still like, I never did that. And then freaking Lisa Vanderpump's, like, printing out fucking text message receipts. They come now with files and folders and they're... Laptop
of, like, Teddy Mellencamp being like, bring out the dog, we're gonna take her down.
Like,
okay, so I did it, but it's totally your fault that I did it.
I like that they now come to reunions like they're lawyers and they have, like, you know, like Louis Vuitton fucking briefcase bags and they're like whipping out their receipts that are printed iPhone messages because A, those can't be doctored. And B, here's your phone. Like, let's print them out. Cause, and they were like the huge.
I have a really stupid question, by the way. Mm-hmm. How do you print your iPhone messages?
You just download it to print.
How?
Where's my phone?
Oh, like to a wireless printer?
To a wireless printer, or you email it to yourself?
Oh, yeah.
And you, like, do screenshots?
Like, you screenshot it and you email it. Yeah. All right. I'm.
No, it's not a dumb question. Stupid. No, you're not. That is not true. So then, okay. The worst, I did a little bit of thinking. Jill's not mad that Bethany said get a hobby. Jill's mad that Bethany didn't call Bobby. And by mad, I mean hurt. And she doesn't want to admit to being hurt by that. So she's latching on to the crazy thing Because she says so many, like, you know, I don't know. I just think that she actually is mad about Bethany not.
I'm going to bring up another favorite reference of mine. Mm-hmm. The Clue movie. Mm-hmm. And the cancer is a red herring.
Really? Cancer's a red herring?
The cancer's a red herring. She's not mad about the fucking cancer. She did. She was traveling the entire summer. He supposedly had cancer.
Okay,
she,
don't say supposedly. Like, he had cancer.
I think
cancer.
He had cancer.
The
but
degree
like,
of how bad it was, fine.
Right. It sounds like it was not that bad.
It's not, and, you know, Vicky Gumvelson and what's-his-face making up cancer.
Brooks, right. Like, we know he had cancer, but, like, but the story she's trying to paint is he was in chemo every week, and
said,
Bethany was sipping cocktails at the beach and not
she
giving
said,
a fuck.
She said, get a hobby. My hobby is my husband got cancer, and my hobby was going to the hospital, and my hobby was visiting him, and my hobby was taking care of him, and my hobby was feeding him. So, A, that's just you being a wife, first off. Whether or not she did it, that's not a hobby. That's just being a partner.
Yeah.
Like, if John, God forbid, ever got sick, I wouldn't sit there and be like, everyone feel bad for me because I have to take care of him.
Like, yeah.
No, you love that person. You do whatever you can do to help that person and be with that person. And you don't make other people feel bad because they don't do that. Also, you're lying. Yeah. But.
Like, we know she's lying because Bethany already, and Bethany's a lot of thing, a liar she is not. So when Bethany says, you're traveling, you were doing this, you were doing that, it didn't seem like that big a deal, I will 100% believe Bethany.
Same. I do too. And and I think what bothers me about her calling, like her saying taking care of her husband, I know she was using as a hobby, like facetiously, to make Bethany feel bad, but it's just like, your husband had cancer. Don't make that about you. Don't make his sickness
about her.
About you. And like, maybe like sickness is a very personal thing for me because I get sick and I get hurt a lot. And I project that people, like that I'm a burden and all of this stuff. So for her to like almost say that Bobby's cancer was a burden to her and not so many words really, really triggered me.
Well, I think you're also coming at it from the perspective that Bobby's cancer obviously returned and he died from it.
Well, yeah,
and
but I'm saying like
so
her, I'm coming from a point where
for her to be so flippant about it to win an argument makes it that much worse.
Well, yes, but in general, I feel myself like a burden when I'm hurt, like with my shoulder I can't do much. Or when I'm sick, or whatever, when I have to go to the hospital, or that, like, I'm always sick. There's always something. I'm going into anaphylactic. Who the fuck knows?
Gosh, you're such a fucking burden.
That's what I feel like all the time. Like, it's a really deeply borrowed, ingrained imprint from my entire life. Like, I've been sick my whole life. Everyone in my life has acted that way. Have they thought that? Have I projected that maybe they felt that way and they didn't? Sure. I don't know. But to see her act like taking care of her husband was a burden just pissed me off to no end.
Yeah.
I was like, this
she's
fucking bitch. It's not about you. It's not about Tom. Tell me it's not about Tom. It's about Tom.
This time it's not about Tom. Jill's fighting style is as follows. She has decided in her head what she's mad about and whether it's based in reality or not. But she also decides that she's won the fight prior to entering the fight. Mm. And so she has this fighting style where she's like, oh, yeah, Bethany, tell me what you did for Bobby, the man who clothed you. And which, by the way, Bobby never did any of that shit.
That was
like,
weird.
She was
that
a guest
so
in their
weird.
House.
Right.
But the narrative in her head is that, like, Bethany was homeless on the street and they gave her food and a place to live, and now she's ungrateful. You know, that is what she's mad about, is that she's not the Ethel to Bethany's Lucy. That's all she's really mad about. But Jill is also a really terrible fighter, because the only things she knows how to say are these kind of like convoluted, like, not actual facts, but like opinions about what other someone's, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Motive is in that moment. And, but then on top of it, like, when she's not winning, she just goes, "You're not even my friend. Are you my friend?" That's not what a friend, and that sentence, when people, I've had it said to me, and I will literally walk the fuck away from you. I'm not, like, if you ever say that sentence to me, you're right. I'm not your friend. Yeah. We're done.
I mean, you know? Also, at a certain age, it's like, you can't have a disagreement. Okay, whatever. These women are crazy. Yeah. But it's the same thing as, stop it. Stop, 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 stop. Because she can't actually argue. So instead of letting someone else say something, Kelly Bensimone goes, stop, stop, stop. And then Jill goes, yeah, not my friend. You're not my friend. It's just like not allowing. Again, it's like a filibuster.
Yeah.
There's a section in this book about career. And Jill's story is, I can't. I mean, it's just, I had an idea to start a business to sell, quote unquote, samples, which were clothes that were used by stores to decide what they would buy from the manufacturers. We would buy them at 40% off, quote unquote, cost, and sell them at wholesale prices 6 months before they even hit the stores. That was exclamation mark. I asked Mommy and Daddy to help me. I was all of 22 years old and had never done anything like this in my life. They gave me $10,000 outright, no questions asked. It was a lot of money then, and it's a lot of money now. And you have to remember that my parents never had a lot of money. They had good and bad years, but they were never multimillionaires. Yet they believed in me. Always have. Can you imagine? I learned a lot from that first business venture, and we were quite successful, even as each of us was working elsewhere at another full-time job. When I met my first husband, Stephen, I moved back to New York and we closed the business. I paid back every dime to my parents. Today I look back with awe at how much faith my parents had in me.
So Ramona's never read this book.
Why do you say that? I mean, of course she hasn't.
Because that's Ramona's business. Like, oh, word yeah, for yeah, word. Yeah, that's,
yeah.
That's what Ramona did. That's literally Ramona's story. I don't know about the money from the parents, but that is literally Ramona's story in her business.
I mean, a lot of this is Lisa's advice for career changers, Lisa's second act, Jill's new career. Oh. Oh, that's going to be a good one. Oh, I can't wait to.
Don't give too much away.
No, I'm going to review it based on sections, I think, not the whole book at once.
That'll make it.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got really excited because I was like, there's a section on career? Ha! Must be all Lisa.
That's hilarious. So Jill hangs up on Bethany because that's the most adult thing in the world to do. And she's like congratulating herself on basically winning the fight, because even though she didn't win the fight at all, like I said, she goes into every fight thinking she already won. Bethany's crying on the street.
Do you want to win a fight against your friend? No. That's not. No one wins. If a phone call ends like that, that's not a win. You both fucking lose.
No. Yeah. Like, if that is your best friend, like, if my best friend, which, all right, I don't think Jill is that friend to Bethany, but I would say, like, if you're, like, my in the second tier of good friends, right?
Okay.
Even in that second tier of good friends, if we get into a fight like that, like, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to, because I care, like, when I care about you, I actually really care.
We don't like people. Me and you, we're bitches. We don't like people. But when we like you,
we love you.
We love you. We put our whole selves into that relationship, into that friendship.
So when that goes south in a negative way, I feel that, and it hurts. So for you to view that as a win,
it's disgusting.
Means you clearly were not we were having a different friendship.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's,
and I think that's disgusting. The crux of it is Bethany had a real friendship from her point of view, and Jill had a plaything.
Jill had attention. You know?
Yeah. Which, by the same way, we see that repeat itself with Carol later on down the road, because
I'm going to run a marathon. Today I'm running a marathon.
That party was not enough of a marathon party for me.
I want my eggs 3 different ways, but not touching. The fucking eggs. Ugh,
all right, I can't. Sorry. Hate her.
All right. I think we're done, though. Like, poor Bethany's crying in her beautiful red coat.
Yeah.
And Jill and Lou are cackling like the hags they are.
Yeah. Next week's episode is the fucking epic episode showdown of this fight.
I'm so mad at us, though. We had every intention of going to New York and filming fight as us.
Yeah, I don't think we really thought the pandemic was going to go this long, though.
That's true.
Otherwise, we probably could have still done it. But
guys, I was going to be Ramona, and I was going to be sitting there talking to Lainey, who was like Bethany. And it was going to be a really good filming experience. But instead, just as good, we have a very, very special guest coming on.
Yes, I'm super excited. I know they are super excited.
Can't wait for him or her to actually speak with them in live.
Yeah.
Live time. Not typing.
Yeah.
Because I thought you were dead that one time.
Oh. Well, now you just told everyone who it was.
They don't know. No one else knows that story.
No, we talked about it on the show.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, you did.
Damn it. I'm still not saying the name.
Yeah. Listen, if you've been listening that long, then
if you remember you that obscure fact of the time that I thought Lainey died and called
the time that like Lainey didn't answer her phone for like an hour and a half and everyone thought I was dead.
First off, it was a lot longer than that. It was like hours. And I was like, no, she always answers. Even if she's busy, she says she's busy. It's been like 5 hours. Did I do something? Is she mad at me? Is she dead? Oh my God, she's dead. That's how my brain works, in case anyone was wondering. It goes from thinking that you're mad at me to then me being like, she died.
She can't possibly be mad at me. She must be dead. It goes from she can't possibly be busy, she must be mad at me, to no, there's no way she's mad at me, she must be dead.
She must be dead. Oh God, what if she's hurt? What if she's arrested? What if she got in a car accident? There's so many places I have to call. It was a time to be alive. And the pandemic hit and I didn't know what was going on and I was alone in my bedroom for months. I felt like Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Shutter Island. So I'm excited for next week. I'm excited for our special guest. And I think that wraps up this week.
Woohoo!
Yeah, yes.
Well, thank you, everyone. Please go over to andnowwesaidit.com or check us out on our Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter @AndNowWeSaidIt. Please check out projectcomeback.org. And please check out kelporter.com and The Best Mediocre Morning Show.
Thank you for that plug. Yes. You can find
and if you are curious, there's only one blog up, but it is The Witch Academic. I may as well plug myself.
Yes, always plug yourself. Get it. That's the only way we get business in this industry is to plug yourself, damn it. But yes, please listen to the Best Mediocre Morning Show. Please go to the blog and like it. Do the little heart, because that makes me happy, because we all know I need external validation, and I'm the one that writes the blogs, and actually they're pretty funny, and I realize that I can write funny, but only when I don't know. Okay.
Oh, wow. That was a journey.
Don't know what happened there. Unclear. Think it's time for bed.
Yeah.
On that note.
Bye, guys.
Bye.